Today is the 14th of March 2017. I'm interviewing Russell Linden of Havelock North. Russell, would you like to tell us something about your family?
Sure, Frank. Probably first up, my earliest memories go back to my grandmother and grandfather, George Matthew Spencer and Olive Dagg. And George was an interesting character, very much an entrepreneur. His mother came out from England and arrived to the Victorian goldfields and stayed there for a while, and then moved over to Hokitika, and that's where George was born. They moved to Christchurch and then finally ended up in Hastings, and George ended up here at about, I'm not sure how old he was, but about 12 he left school and he was out ploughing and doing bits and pieces like that, helping the family out. His mother had about 11 children, lots of step kids that George had. None of them came to Hastings apart from George, so he settled here. He came here, I guess, in early turn of the 20th century. He met Olive Dagg at some stage, and I'm not sure how or where, and he married her. The Daggs are from Wairarapa, and they tied up with the Wiltons. She was a school teacher, so somewhere they must have met. They got married and had four kids. There was Russell the eldest, Norma, Olga and Zita. And Zita's my mother. Olga and Norma, perhaps I'll go back a little bit earlier than that because they're a little later. George ended up having a truck and did cartage. Mainly he did fertilizer cartage. And spent a lot of time with Hartuma Lime Company. In actual fact, he supported it, became a shareholder and owner, and the Hawke's Bay agent for Hartuma Lime Company. I've still got some old invoices stating all that. He set up the Super Service Station, it was then called Spencer Service Station, in Heratonga Street West, down by Stortford Lodge. It had one petrol pump, and my understanding is one of the first in Hastings. So he's a bit of an entrepreneur in that he saw little gaps in the business area and decided to see what he could do. He had that for a long, long time. That service station was leased. It was then turned into the Super Service Station. He basically had nearly a whole block from Galleon Street through to the next street up from there towards Stortford Lodge. I can't remember the name of it, Frank. Basically had that whole street there. He leased that out. And they had that property until 1970s, roundabout. Then the family sold it. We had Mr. Corns. Mr. Corns leased a shed out the back. And I remember going round and seeing my first V8 engine. And the first V8 engine that Mr. Corns had was going to go into a boat. He used to go around, had this V8 engine in his boat. And that was the first, and I was astounded to see this lovely, gleaming new engine. Out the back also was a mechanic, and as I say, I can't quite remember his name. I think it was Lowe. And also at the back was some sheds that were car painting business that old George set up his son, Russell. Russell was an interesting character, and he'd try all sorts of things. And George was those old-style guys. Woman stayed at home, did the cooking, looked after the kids. The men went out and earned the money. But George, stocky man, always wore a bow tie, always wore a vest and a suit. Suit might be a bit crumbled, but it always suit and waistcoat with a bow tie. Always had a little moustache and he was bald. Stocky guy, probably a guy I wouldn't cross too much. He would be one of those guys who'd be very hard. Brought up hard and he was a hard businessman. He's one of these guys who used to go to the club most nights. The old Heratonga Club, used to be in Market Street upstairs, used to be in there. He'd come home and quite often he'd have his mates come home, they'd have whiskey and a game of cards. And one of the people that I used to know was, and he used to have it in the front room of the house on Townsend Street, was Dr. Cashmore used to come there. And that was the old Dr. Cashmore, yes, the original Dr. Cashmore. And they used to come around, I don't know who else used to come around, but they used to have cards and whiskey. And I can remember in the shed, George used to have cases of Johnnie Walker whiskey. And I thought, oh, okay, whiskey. As I say, he was a bit of an entrepreneur. He did the cartage. 1930s, he was going to build a new garage down in Heratana Street East. However, the earthquake came along just as it had been finished and flattened it. So he got permission from the council to build a theatre, a movie theatre. Basically, it was just a tin shed, but it was backed by one of the top movie film people. I was trying to think what their name was. But he set that up. It was known as the Rat House because it was it was quite scary. They said, I've got a book here written by Michael Fowler about Hastings and Napier's movie theatres. And it talks about the Arcadia Theatre and how the patrons used to have a bit of a scare now and again when the rats used to run up and try and steal their popcorn. Called the Rat House. And it closed down in September 1935. No doubt it was a temporary license because of the earthquake. So it was pulled down and he built Modoc Motors, which most people in Hastings will remember. And he was going to build it for himself, but he was pretty old by then. He was in his 60s. And he decided, no, I won't do that. I'll lease it. So he leased it out to the Jones boys. And the Jones boys eventually bought the building and the site. And so George basically retired after that, but not quite. He got a little thought about building a speedway. And so down the end of Omahu Road, just about where Jarvis Road is, just opposite there, used to be Firth Concrete. And behind there, I think you can still see the mounds where the spectators used to sit. And he built a speedway track there. And he used to have the Maury Duns and Split Waterman, and all these guys came out from England. Maury Dunn was a New Zealander and lived in Hastings. But Ronnie Moore would have been there. Bruce Abernathy. Got a list of the names here.
Yes, I always remember driving down to the speedway. First thing you saw was the lights that were strung around the track.
Yeah, well, we had. It was interesting. He used to go to the milk station and he used to get rolls and rolls of. You know the silver bottle tops used to get? Well, what they used to do is punch them out.
And they had the sheets that the holes in them.
Big sheets. And he used to get those and bring them down to the speedway and wrap them around so they looked like decoration. And I can remember my mum, I went down there once, I was very young, but I can remember going down there once, mum was in the ticket box, and it was pouring with rain. And that was his biggest problem. Every time he ran a meeting, it was raining. And so it gradually dwindled until he thought, no, this is enough, I've had enough, so he pulled the plug after about 3 years. But he had Ronnie Moore and Eric Williams. Now, Eric Williams, you'll know, the father of our real estate agent girl. Can't remember her name now. Pat Clark. So it was quite interesting, this guy that 12-year-old left school, was able to pick up all these little businesses along the way, and he did very well. In his day, he'd been quite a wealthy man. He owned a house on Townsend Street, which wasn't built for him, but it was pretty well brand new when he bought it in 1921. He had a house, in fact it was two houses, in Queen Street, where his son lived with his wife, Ivina Popham, and she had a dance studio there. He had the house next door there rented out. He had a house out at Havelock North here, which is now Porter Drive. And he had half an acre in there with an old house that my mother and I and her second husband lived in. And she used to grow leeks and onions and that in the plot next door to sell. So he was very clever.
When I was a small boy, I remember him coming to our farm, spreading lime. I always thought he had an international truck, but in fact it was a Rio. George was driving the truck.
He actually talked about Rio. When he was building that station for Modern Motors there, that was going to be the Rio station, because he had the agency for Rio trucks. But he decided to pull a plug on. So they actually had, my understanding, they had a very flash Rio car that did a tour right throughout New Zealand and stopped off at Hastings to promote it.
In the early 40s, when I was only a small boy, I remember this truck.
I wonder if anyone ever kept some of those old trucks.
Anyway, Russell, we'll carry on. Your mother had two sisters and Russell.
Yeah. Born in the 1920s. And Olive was very much a stay-at-home mother. and very much the old style mother. She did preserves, she cooked. The interesting thing about, they lived in Townsend Street, which was considered one of the better streets in Hastings. Westerns used to live in Townsend Street.
Well, they were high and dry. That was the reason they picked those little places, because Hastings being swamp, they were dry.
Yeah. Out the back, George and Olive had a tennis court. It was actually on St Leonard's Park. It wasn't actually their land. George being George, he just used what was around, and no one said anything different. And so he built this tennis court. It had a pavilion, little pavilion to sit in. And I can still remember seeing the old tennis nets on a tree trunk. Yes. Used to lay them on there at the end of the season and used to stay out there. But every Sunday they'd have tennis, and people would be invited around for tennis and a cup of tea and that sort of thing. My mother, Zita, had two donkeys that she kept out the back. And she loved her donkeys very much. Also out the back was a cow, which used to be milked. And they used to milk the cow and have milk for the family. That was in St Leonard's Park. Eventually, St Leonard's Park was used to dump all the fill from the earthquake. All the rubbish from the earthquake was dumped at St Leonard's Park. A little side issue was where Townsend Street is, and it's still there, they've subdivided the back off now, unfortunately, but however, there was an entrance to the park, into St Leonard's Park, and George had an arrangement with the city engineer, Mr. Fisher, because he'd built his garage facing onto this entrance into the park. And so George was allowed to use the entrance into the park as his driveway and his parkway. And no one else did. Now and again we get a few cars go right down the end there to park up. But no, this was basically our driveway into his garage. And people used to come along who were visiting, park on this parkway. Anyway, it was available to the Spencer family, basically until Olive Spencer died, the mother, his wife. As soon as she died, the council came along and put up a fence. As soon as she died, it would be no more than a month later, they put a chain fence across that entranceway and no one could use it.
So the garage had no access? The
garage had no access. As soon as she died, that was the arrangement there.
The arrangement would have been between Fisher and...
And George, and it would be done at the bloody club. Use it. So that was the story there, and 4 hour on Townsend Street. That was interesting because my grandmother, as I said, was a stay-at-home mother, and she had people, family arrive, and they would arrive, and I don't know how she did it, but she always had food for them. They always got a feed, and they always had a bed. How and where she put them, I have no idea. We used to stay there when we were young kids because our mother divorced my father very early on, we're only young, and so we stayed there from the time I started school, which was 54, I suppose, might have been 53, and I started school at Rarawika, and all the girls and Russell went to school at Hastings West, it was called then, now Rarawika, and so I stayed there. So that house was in our family from 1921 to about 1986.
Now, just retracking our steps a bit, where did your father come from?
Born in Hastings.
And what was his name?
Ivor Lyndon. And his father was Bert Lyndon. And Bert was the manager, I suppose you'd call him, of the Hastings Club. And they used to live there. And Bert married my grandmother, who was a Banks. And I can't remember her name now. And the Banks come from a family of Kirks, and Annie Kirk, which was I think my grandmother's grandmother, was one of the first white girls, babies, born in Hastings. And they used to live down by the town clock, around that area there.
So you said your father and your mother separated when you were
young. Yeah, my father's a projectionist in a movie theatre, and they met at the Regent Theatre. Mum was an usherette. And Dad was the projectionist there. So then they got married, had two kids, and myself and Stuart, my brother. But they separated after about 2 years or three years.
Sure.
They were in Napier at that stage, and they were renting a house in Napier. I think times were pretty tough.
Sure.
So I suspect that was probably a problem, I don't know.
Sure.
Norma and Olga, my mother's sisters, both married American servicemen. Norma married a Navy man. She was down in Wellington at the time and met the serviceman, and they married, and he took her back to America, and she basically stayed in America for the rest of her life. Yes. Tripping back to New Zealand now and again, my grandmother, Olive Spencer, used to go and see her on a regular basis and travel over to America. And she did that on her own quite often. And then Olga married Gordon Breen, who was in the American Navy during the war. Well, she went to America and met him over there. And funny enough, I think after about a week, she decided to marry him. So it was a very short thing. And Russell eventually ended back in America too. He, after different things he tried, he lost his eye. He joined the Air Force, but he was at a fun fair shooting targets, and a piece of the metal flew out of the gun and took his eye out. And so he lost his eye, which he couldn't become a pilot then, which was his dream. That's what he wanted to do. He could still drive, he still drove, but he became a mechanic. And in 1956, he and his wife, Ivina Popham, went to America and ended up with Bell Corporation, which was making helicopters. And he was their safety man. But he eventually got himself into a position where he was a mechanic and became a helicopter mechanic. And he came back here and set up a company called Worldwide Helicopters, which is stationed on Hastings. And I think basically they did spraying and all sorts of things like that. So he came back and set it up with an American pilot. He was a Vietnam pilot when he came back here. And he stayed a little while and then went back to America. He loved America and stayed there till he died. His wife died very early on. She had cancer, but she had cancer for a long time. But then his son also died, Graham. He died in a helicopter crash. He was involved in helicopters as well. So Russell ended up on his own, basically, in America. But he survived. He was a cab driver, and he leased an airport at Kalinga. And we went and visited him once, and he had... Russell's one of these guys who started things and never finished them. He had a half-finished helicopter, he had a half-finished plane, he had a half-finished big touring bus.
Yes.
But that was Russell, and everyone knew what he was like, and so they just went with the flow. Norma had three kids, they were all in America, but she and her husband were both buried in Hastings. They wanted to come back here. Even her husband wanted to be back here. He loved New Zealand. Olga, both of them are deceased now. Gordon was from New Jersey, never went back to New Jersey. I think he went back once in his whole time, but he came back into Hastings with Olga in about 1956 or so, and he started up a restaurant takeaway place called the Fat Boy Barbecue. Fat Boy Barbecue is one of the first places to start hamburgers. So Gordon started this up with his wife, and they lived next door, and this shed that they started was an electrical engineer's shed. It was basically a dirt floor, and he built it himself and set the whole thing up. Did very well for 2 or 3 years and then sold it. And then it was going under, so he went and bought it back again and spent another couple of years with it and sold it again. And the second term that he had with the Fat Boy Barbecue, I worked for him. And I was about 13, I suppose. Mm. I used to work Friday nights, and I'd work from 6 till 10. And on Saturday night, I used to work from 6 till we closed. And there was always two hamburger patties left. One for Russell and one for Gordon. We always had a hamburger at the end of the day. I can still remember the times I used to be so tired that I'd be sitting on a stool with my head on the bench, sound asleep at about 12 o'clock. We never used to close till about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And Gordon would just leave me there.
Eric Taylor used to work with Gordon and Olga for the first 3 years they were there. And he said it was a great social place.
Oh, it was different. We never really had anyone. Of course, in those days, they had the Milk Bar Cowboys, a little earlier than that. But anyway, they used to come along, and they used to have a few people who had a bit drunk and get a bit carried away. But he never took a backward step. And he never took a backward step. And he'd go out there and he'd sort them out. The odd bottle was thrown at him and things like that.
He had a big stature, didn't he?
He was 6 foot. He was wiry, but he had an interesting life. Gordon Breen, that's Olga's husband, he was actually a trialist for the Olympic Games, a speed skater for America. And his daughter has still got his speed skates that he used. And he was also a landing craft operator. He lied about his age. He was only 17 when he was in the Navy. And he used to drive landing craft from the boats to the beaches and back again. Never really talked much about that. He just said, the bullets used to whistle around my ears a few times. So that's what he did during the war. But he ended up in California. Olga had gone over there to see her sister. And they'd met. That's where they met. And I think Olga enjoyed America too. And then Zita met Ivor and married Ivor. And then, yeah, so they've all lived good long lives. George lived to 80, just short of his 80th birthday. Olive Dagg lived to 93, I think it was. Her son, Russell, lived to 94. Olga's daughter, Norma, lived to 81, 82. Olga lived to 90. Zita lived to 89, so just short of her 90th birthday. So, yeah, and they never held back on living life. They used to enjoy life, so it wasn't eating healthy food or taking care of themselves. They did what they liked. I was just reading about Aunt Daisy, and this guy did an experiment using Aunt Daisy's recipes. And said, no one got fat on Aunt Daisy's recipes, and yet easy recipes, easy food to get. And very wholesome, very nice. Don't worry about eating too much sugar or anything like that. No obesity. George in his latter life was very immobile. He had to have two sticks. He had arthritis. Our days, we get an artificial hip replacement. Yep, right. In those days, they didn't. He just put up with the pain. He had glaucoma, so he wasn't seeing too well. He had a chair specially built for him, and it was a high seat. So all he had to do was sort of basically lean back on him, and we called it the throne. Beautiful chair, and he used to sit back on that. But I remember my grandmother's house. She had a little kitchen, she had a gas stove in that little kitchen, and she used to have those pull out, you know, those sort of tip over, used to put flour and sugar, bins and all sorts of things. Used to have those, and in this little kitchen she used to cook Christmas dinners, family dinners. And how on earth she did, I don't know.
Kitchens were like that. On the corner of Southampton and Caramoo Road, there was a big homestead.
On the corner of Southampton?
And Railway Road.
Oh, yes, I know.
And that had been the doctor's home, and it had this very small kitchen with one of those terrazzo benches. And you thought, how on earth?
Did they have a larder? Or that's butler's? Was even bigger than the kitchen. Yeah.
That was it?
Yeah. And next to that was the dining area, which is really what we'd call a family room now, with a big oak dining room table that sat out under how many people. We had benches, pews along the back, and we used to sit tons of people around that table. And I can remember sitting there with my grandmother on Christmas Day, and we used to sit there and we'd pod the peas, you know? And we did that in the morning and pulled a big pot of peas up. We used to do that, and they had a big backyard. And George at that stage was pretty immobile, but I can remember my brother and I, he called us the Kelly Gang because we had no end of energy and we just went. And anyway, we were running through puddles one day out on this driveway area. And George had enough. He just stopped doing that. But anyway, he grabbed one of us round the neck with his walking stick. He said, come here. Anyway, a neighbour was going past. George, you can't do that to kids. You can't do that. He says, you mind your own business. This is my kids. Oh, George. I can remember always he used to sit by the dining room window. There was a window there. Yes. He used to sit. That was his spot. So he could see out the backyard. Yeah. But he didn't move too well. Yes. And we used to see him in that window the whole time. But I can remember in that same room, they had an old wireless. I used to listen to my grandmother. Believe it or not, she played hockey for Wairarapa, and that's probably where I got my skill from. But in 1956, we listened on that radio, and no one could talk while she listened to the tests against the Springboks and All Blacks. I'm an old Winston McCarthy.
It's a goal!
That's it. Yeah. And I can remember hearing that. Yeah.
Now, what we need to do now is come back and talk about Russell Lyndon's family. Did your mother remarry?
Yep, bloke by the name of Bill Smith. But we went and lived at my grandmother's place, when that she got divorced, and I started school at Rarika. And we were only there a year, I suppose. And then I came out to Havelock North, and we lived at Havelock North here for a couple of years. She didn't stay long with this guy. She separated from him after about 18 months, and then she was on her own. And so Stuart and I sort of went between my grandmother's and where the mum ended up, and she worked for a guy by the name of Bill Little. He was a builder. And Bill said, "I've got a section down Grove Road." He said, "I'll build your house." So he built a two-bedroom home down Grove Road, right dead smack in the middle of all the state houses. It was. So Mum had this house built for her. So she was a solo mum from about 1954-55. We stayed with my grandmother, and then 1956 this was built, and she moved into the house with her two boys. And she worked. She worked at Slater's. Old Charlie Slater's, she worked there for a long time as the office manager. And she also worked at Finney's Bakery. Oh, Hugh Smith was the manager there. And she used to start at 6 in the morning and finish at 3 in the afternoon. So she'd be home for us kids when we finished school. So we had to get ourselves to school. And she took in a couple of boarders, two guys. And in the two-bedroom, we slept in Mum's room in bunks. And they had to share the other room. So she had these boarders for a long time. Then she had two girls. So she's had boarders all her life. Yes, she's always had them. And then she, as I say, she was at Finney's Bakery. She must have gone to Finney's Bakery after Slater's. And Finney's Bakery closed, and then she went back to Slater's. Then she met Bruce Gordon. And Bruce was a Christchurch guy, his ex-jockey. And they married. And they opened up a dairy down Carina Road. And they had that dairy for a long time. They opened that at 6 in the morning, closed at 11 o'clock. And Bruce always said, "I open at 6 in the morning so I catch all the freezing workers going to work and they can buy their cigarettes and their sandwiches and so forth. But I stay open to 11 o'clock at night to get all the drunks coming home to buy pies and cigarettes on the way home." So they had that for a while. They went down to Longburn. They had a pub down in Longburn, which is out of Palmerston North. Yes. They looked after the freezing works down there and also the dairy workers down there. So she was a pretty hard pup. Yes. They did very well out of it. Sold that up, sold the lease on that, and went to Auckland. And Bruce worked at the Takanini racetrack, and he was the guy who tallied them coming in and out. So they used the training track, they got charged. He used to take who was coming in and going out. So he loved his horses. And Zita worked at different jobs around there. And then Bruce died of cancer, and so Mum came back to Hastings and lived in Hastings until she died. But she's worked all her life. She's always been a worker.
She probably needed to support being a solo.
There was no sort of parent payment. The only thing she got was 1 and 6 a week on each kid, which was a child welfare thing. She used to get a little warrant.
It wasn't much.
No. And my father used to pay maintenance. It was a guinea, £1, 1 shilling, and that used to arrive every Saturday morning without fail, never missed a beat. And that was to pay the maintenance for the two kids, and my job was to go round the corner to the dairy in Jellicoe Street there and cash that check. I used to buy cigarettes for my mother, which was Capstan Plains. I can remember those. And he used to cash a check every Saturday, and I'd come home with cigarettes. So Dad never missed a payment.
So did you maintain contact with your father through those young years?
We used to go and stay with him for holidays, school holidays, and we might stay a week or something like that. He'd remarried, and she had four kids, so I've got four half-brothers and half-sisters. And I've kept in contact with them, always been most welcome, and his second wife, Lucy, always been very good to us. Took us in when it was his turn to look after us, and no complaints or anything like that.
Yes.
No, it's just very good. And he used to take us to the movie theatres. We used to watch for free, movie theatres for free.
Coming back to Russell Linden, did you move to...
Went to Havelock. I finished my primary school there for 2 years. Havelock Primary.
Yes, kept that under your hat.
Yeah, and I remember they'd just opened up the top part of new school, 54 or something. And I can remember lunch used to be in the Dell, and we used to sit there, and then after lunch we used to go into class, and we used to have to lie on a mat and have a nap. And then we moved back to Hastings and went to Raurika again. And I got a photo of that when I was at school at Raurika. And all those kids that were in my class, I went right through school with different times, yeah. Because they were at Raurika, and then I met them in intermediate, and then I went to Hastings Boys High. So all those boys, there's old Curly Clark and all these guys, I went right through school with. And the mothers, believe it or not, I might have met them once when I was a teenager, knew me all the way through.
Yes.
So those mothers knew all those kids. That's so when Mum got the house built in Grove Road, we moved there and I went to Mayfair School. And I finished my primary school at Mayfair. In those days, Frank, I used to go to Hastings Intermediate at 11, get on a bike and bike from Grove Road across town. And I used to do that as high school too. So I used to go right across town and never thought anything about it.
No,
it was just
right.
part of your job.
And at some stage or other, you started chasing a little ball with a bent stick.
Hmm. I got introduced to that by one of the boarders that Mum had, Maury Roderick. And Maury Roderick played hockey for Hawke's Bay. And he had an old hockey stick. It was worn down. And I think originally what he wanted was someone to hit the ball back at him when he was practicing. So that was my introduction to hockey. He was also a very good hammer thrower. And he used to practice out the back. He put a concrete pad in the lawn out the back.
Mm.
And he used to practice his hammer throwing. But anyway, that's where I learned hockey. And I used to go over to the park, because the hockey park was at Windsor Park there, right across the road. And I used to practice and practice and practice and practice, running up and down the paddock, up and down the paddock.
Mm.
So, yeah, so that's where I learned my hockey. I played hockey at intermediate. Then went to high school and got the first 11 when I was 13 because I was short, so I played a few games. So the next year they said, right, who was in the first 11 last year? So I put my hand up, because I was. And so I played in the first 11 from 14 till I left school. And I had some good players in those days too. At 18, I got on the Hawke's Bay side. I played one game for the Hawke's Bay Colts and then went straight to the Hawke's Bay senior side. I played 2 years in what was called the Eastern Zone Colts, which was from Danny Virk right up to Gisborne. And they selected a team to go away to national tournament. Captained that 1 year. Last year I was in it. And from that last tournament, I got into New Zealand Juniors. So New Zealand Colts team that went to Australia. We had a tour in Australia. Played rep hockey for about 20 years. From 18 to 38, I retired at 38. I had most of it in Hawke's Bay, but I had 2 years in Whakatane, I played for Bay of Plenty. And I had 2 years in London, and played hockey over there. Got into an invitation side there. And then came back in 1974 and played hockey until 80-something.
And so you also started work. Did you join the bank?
Interesting about that. I left school and thought, I wouldn't mind joining the bank. So we got references, and of course it was easy to get references around. The family's accountant and the family lawyer and someone else got references, and I thought, yeah, I'd like to join the bank. They start at 10 and finish at 3.
Little did you know.
Little did I know. And anyway, I said, that'll give me time to play hockey and go surfing and so forth. Oh no, you start 8:30 and you finish at 5. And on Wednesday night, you stay to 7:30, balancing the books for the week. So that blew that idea out the window. I enjoyed my time at the bank. I had 13 years at the bank, BNZ. And they looked after you, they were very good. And ended up almost like a family. It was very hard to leave then. But we had very good social life, excellent social life. And we did lots of things together. You know, we used to have parties together, we used to have cricket matches and all sorts of things. Went from, I didn't do the junior's job, went straight into what was called details, which is looking after the tellers, balancing the tellers. And from there to foreign exchange department, I was in the accounts department, which looked after all the accounts. And then I got transferred to Whakatane, and I was in charge of the foreign exchange department up there. And that included a company called Berg's Game and Seafood. And they were a very big company who sent possum skins away, they sent venison away, they sent all gamey stuff away. And I used to have to look after their accounts, make sure their money was coming in, and when they had to pay for something, it was sent out, that sort of thing. So I had that for 2 years, and I got transferred to London, and I had 2 years in London. And basically in London, the Kiwi boys were put into positions that the Poms didn't want to do, and they were basically reconciliation jobs, which I enjoyed doing. You had to search out where this money went and that sort of thing. Funny enough, got transferred back to Stortford Lodge, which was most unusual. Usually went to Auckland or Wellington. And I came back to Stortford Lodge as first assistant to Brian Bisley. And he's the manager there, and we had a little staff of about six or eight, something like that. And my job was sort of a non-executive accountant as first assistant after the manager. And I got transferred back to Hastings again as the loans administration manager, which was looking after the loans documents, making sure all the loans were all in line and they had all the necessary documentation. I stayed there for a while, and then in 1979 I changed course and went and worked for Essam Cushing, Selwyn Cushing, as a sharebroker. And I was a one-man band on my own with a part-time secretary. His secretary helped me out when she wasn't busy with him. And he was at that stage a director of Briley, so he was very busy. When I first arrived at Essam Cushing doing sharebroking, we were hand-posting. And I said to someone, this is ridiculous, because I'd just come from a bank from 1969 and had a computer.
Yes.
We were all computer-driven and Mica reading, things like that. And I was there 8 or 9 years, worked from me on my own to 12 staff. And that was the 1980s, so 1980s were wonderful years. Everyone moans about the greedy 80s, but everyone had a smile on their face, and everyone was involved in the share market. Everyone was making money. Everyone was happy.
Now, at some stage, you met Christine. So where did her folks come from? Were they local?
No. George was Scottish. He came out from Scotland when he was 21.
His surname was?
Coutts, George Coutts, and he ended up down in Dunedin, and he met his wife, Joan Patton, Joan Patton. And Joan was born in New Zealand, but both her parents were Scottish. Both came out from Scotland. And so she was full Scot. George was Scottish. And the one thing she said, I'll never marry a Scotsman, I'll never marry a farmer. She married a Scots farmer. He was in the telegraph business down in Dunedin, and anyway, he went to war. And he was a prisoner of war for 5 years, 4 years, something like that. Escaped, got caught, put back, he was in Crete, and he got caught in Crete, taken to northern Greece. He was put in a prisoner of war camp there. He escaped from there. He was handed back to the Germans by some locals. So he was sent up to Germany, and he was there till the end of the war. And even some guys he was in the camp with, from local around here, Les, he's a builder. He said, if it wasn't for George, we'd have starved. George spoke German and could, he learned German. And apparently the Scots, the way they speak is very German. They don't have an accent, they actually speak very well. And he was able to talk to the guards, and he used to get chickens and bits and pieces from them. So he survived. But George met Joan, he came up here, he came back from the war and got a rehab farm in Tutera. And they stayed there until they retired. And George died 72. And they reckon it was through the time he had as a prisoner of war.
Sure,
the doctor
the stress,
said that, the stress that he had.
Sure. And so, Christine, have any brothers and sisters?
Sister, Margaret. Just the two girls. Margaret married Mike Webster, who used to work on Tutera Station. They met there and married and went down to Turakina. And they had a farm down there. And they just retired and sold the farm. They went to Napier Girls High. They boarded at Napier Girls High. Still very friendly with a lot of the girls that they boarded with, as they do. But she worked as a hairdresser to start with. And she finished up hairdressing, went to aerial mapping. And she worked at aerial mapping in the dark rooms, developing all the films that Van Ash used to take photos of. From there, she went into the drafting department. And she used to draw maps by hand, and this is the contours. She used to draw bridges and little bushes, and I said, how on earth could you do that? But she's very precise.
Yes.
She did cake
yes.
decorating.
Yes.
She's very precise.
Yes.
And she used to do these big maps like
yes.
this and spend hours doing.
And so did she play any sports?
Not really. She played sport at school, netball and hockey and bits and pieces, but she was never a sports person.
So then you married in...
1970. We went to Whakatane virtually straight away, 1971. Not long after we got married, we went up there. And then went to London together and had a good time in London. Met up, her sister was over there already, and we toured the continent in a combi van with her sister and Chris and I. And Margaret was driving the van, and we're going into France, from Spain into France. And anyway, she got caught up in the wrong one-way traffic, and a policeman came out and stopped. And we had a Kiwi sign on the front and the back, so they knew we were tourists. Mm. You're going the wrong way. You need to turn around and go back that way. And he looked in the van and he saw these two girls and me. And he said, "Where you sleep?" And I said, "One girl there, one girl there, me in the middle." He went, "Oh la la!" Off we went. But yeah, no, we had a good time. 6 weeks on the continent. Saw lots and did lots. It was a lot of fun. But we came back. We were married 6 years before we had Matthew. And we had Matthew, and then a couple of years later, we got Jodie. Yeah, Matthew's got a girl and a boy, and so has Jodie got a girl and a boy. The two girls are the oldest, and the two boys are the youngest.
Now, somewhere during this period, you lost your brother.
Yes, right. 1985, Stuart had been in America. He'd been to England, he'd stayed in England for a couple of years, and then went to America. His passion was car racing, and his next biggest passion to the car racing was to drive a NASCAR in America. He just loved them. So he went to America. He spent about 8 years in America, and he did that by way of our uncle, Max, who's my father's brother, and he got an introduction to a Toyota factory. Stuart was a mechanic. He'd done his time as a mechanic. Toyota company in Canada. So he got a job in Canada, and then flicked across the border into America, and eventually got a green card. And he worked as a mechanic building NASCARs for a guy by the name of Bosco Lowe. He originally went to California, and he was in LA, and then he went to Arizona, and he had little businesses along the way. Then he decided, no, I've got to go to where NASCAR is, which is the southern states of America. So he went to North Carolina, drove over there on a motorbike, and he ended up with Bosco Lowe. Stuart turned his hand to a lot of things too. He was a mechanic by trade, but he learnt panel beating and he learnt spray painting. And what he did was he used to flare guards, the fenders, and it wasn't an easy job, it was quite a tricky little job. Anyway, the NASCARs in those days didn't have any flares around it. So he said to Bosco, "I'll do that for you, I'll show you." And so he got the job. Of course, a mechanic, he worked as a mechanic as well, and he used to flare these guards. Well, built his own car. First car he had was a Torino, Ford Torino. It was a big thing. He raced that in the States, and then he got himself a Ford, and he used to race that. He never raced a NASCAR, he raced an ARCA. Division 1 was NASCAR, next one was ARCA. And anyway, he raced that for a year or so, a couple of years, and at Atlanta International Speedway, which is a big banked speedway, he was racing his car, and he saw his mate, Bosco Lowe, was up the top. So he followed him, and he dropped down like that and put his foot down to pass him on the inside. And as he went down, he lost traction, and the car went sideways and went down into the bank area and hit an earth bank. And all drivers will tell you that you don't hit earth banks, because you don't bounce, you just stop dead. You go boof, stop like that. But broke Stuart's neck, because he hit his head against it. Went on that angle there, and the driver was on this side, hit his head on the roll bar, and that was the end of him. If it had been concrete, he would have bounced, but it was earth. And from that day, basically, they took that earth back away and put it, because there's an entrance in and out for the ambulances and that sort of thing, and they put a concrete thing there. So he got killed 2nd of June 1985. I got a phone call from his girlfriend over there to say he'd been killed. So we got I think my passport had expired, and I rang them or something like that. It was Monday anyway, which was Queen's birthday weekend. Mm. Anyway, we got tickets up to Auckland. When I was at the airport in Napier, who was the MP for Hastings here? Big tall guy, Labour guy.
Butcher.
Butcher was at the airport, and anyway, my mother and I were going over, and we were in a fluster, of course, trying to get things done. Mm. And I didn't have a passport. I recognised him. And he said, "Don't worry." He said, "It'll be ready for you in Auckland by the time you know, it'll be there." And so we're flying up there, and the passport was ready. All they need, I can't remember how the photo got in there, whether they used an old photo, because I had one from England. So whether they used an old photo, I don't know how they did, but anyway, the passport was waiting there with a visa. And we flew out that night and got over there, and we flew into Atlanta Airport and got a rental car and drove all the way up to the Atlanta Speedway, which is out of Atlanta, Georgia. And it'd be a good hour, at least an hour out. We found our way there, and people were very good to us when we got there. Of course, they had to be, because they weren't too sure whether we were going to get hold of a lawyer and start suing people. But we didn't. We just let it slide, just carried on. We had them cremated over there, and we brought them back. And that was an interesting thing. My cousin from the States, Norma's son, Spencer, came over. And then when we flew back to San Francisco, and had a little box of Stuart's ashes. Mm. And anyway, we're going through customs or something, and we said, "What's that box?" And they said, "Oh, that's my brother's ashes. Can I have a look at it, please?" I said, "You go right ahead. There it is. You open it up and you do whatever you like with it." "Oh, no, it's okay. No, it'll be okay." Let it slide. So we brought him back here and buried him here. He was 35. Yeah. He was a man, a bit like George, did his own thing. You might call them selfish, but that was the way they were in those days. They were blinkered into what they wanted to do in their life, the way they went. And it was interesting times following their lives.
Now, you've been for 12 years a sharebroking man?
Yeah, about 8 or 9 years. Yeah. Then the share market crashed in 1987, and suddenly there was nowhere. And so 12 staff went down very quickly to 3 or 4, I think. And then I started off with Tremaine Real Estate. I started off as I was the manager in the branch, but really it was advertising manager more than anything else. And I was to look after all the advertising, run the office, except that the accounting side was done by Kay, and the overall license was held by Jim Simpkin. But my job was to run it, do all the advertising, do all the marketing, make sure the signs were done, make sure I kept records of all the open homes, all the staff sales, and who was doing what and what commissions were paid, that sort of thing. Everyone who was working at that time, I kept a record of all the open homes I did, all the people I had through, and all that sort of thing. And then Cal died, and threw the cat amongst the pigeons. And Chris decided to take over, and so he came along, came back from England, didn't he?
Both the boys were overseas.
Well, no, Simon was in BNZ in foreign exchange in Wellington.
But he was on an OE because Pam took over first.
Yes, yeah. She had the licence. She was given a temporary licence at that stage, and they have 6 months, I think, before they have to find someone else. And that's when Chris did his, and Simon did his eventually too. So I did real estate for 22 years, Frank.
And during this time, Christine became a flower person.
Yep. She was at Turners and Growers in the flower department there. So she went from drafting. She did drafting in Whakatane. She did drafting in London. In fact, she had a security clearance that she could go anywhere in any government department in London. Mm. And if they even have a high meeting, she could walk into that meeting and do whatever she wanted to do. And they couldn't stop her. And her job was to go into these, like the Ministry of Defence or Naval, whatever, and she'd go in, and her job was to sketch out the building, because quite often these places, they take out a wall, and so people didn't know what was in there. So every year they'd go through and check what had been done. Yeah. And then she'd draw that up, and One of her jobs was she started the drawings on the Channel Tunnel. And one of the other jobs she did just before she left was she was going to be invited to go with one of the guys into Buckingham Palace. And they were going to go through to check all the rooms hadn't been changed. And then she came back here and she got a job at Turners and Growers in the flower department. A friend of hers used to work in there and she did a part-time job and loved that because she loved flowers and gardening. And then the friend left and so they said, well, who have we got? Well, yeah. Christine put her hand up and says, I'll do it. Then they changed it from wholesaling. It was an auction at that stage. Yes. Another girl was doing the auction and that girl left. So Christine did the auctions. So yes. She was an auctioneer in there for a little while and did the flowers. And then Turners and Growers in their wisdom decided to close everyone except Auckland and Wellington in Christchurch. So Palmerston North, Tauranga, Gisborne, Whanganui, all those other flower departments all closed. Christine was doing very, very well. And I think they regretted closing Palmerston North and Hastings because they're doing so well. Anyway, she finished on the Friday and Ken Harvey was working at Fruit Packers as the CEO over there. And he knew Christine from when he had Farmer Joe's down at Stafford Lodge. He used to buy flowers off Christine. And he rang her and says, what are you going to do now that you've left? And she said, well, I says, come away from me. What doing? Selling apples. Okay, Ken, but I don't know one apple from another. Anyway, she started in there and set up the local market sales there.
Yeah.
Prior to that, a girl just sat at
waiting for orders.
Orders to come in and just sent them out. So Christine got into the markets and she changed them. She got them so they weren't just rubbish apples going out. She made sure they were good quality apples going out. So they've got a good reputation for them.
And so she's still there in 2017, isn't she?
15 years. 15 years she's been there.
Your two children, what does Matthew do these days?
Matthew trained as a mechanic with Guy Wellwood in Havelock North here, and he finished his apprenticeship, and he went down to Palmerston North, and he worked for an engineering firm down there, and he did all sorts of things. He worked on the dam at Shannon there, there's a power station there, he worked in there. He used to go around the country fixing up things like cranes. He had to go and if a crane had broken down somehow, he used to fix up cranes. Floodgates.
Yep.
The floodgates weren't working properly. He had to go and fix up those. So it was a big engineering firm. He left there and came back to Murray Wellwoods here and worked for Murray there for a while and decided to go out on his own. Murray collapsed. Business broke down. So he went out on his own with another guy for a partnership for a couple of years. And the partner said, look, I'm going to buy you out. It's not working with the two of us here. So he bought him out and Matthew works at Norwoods now. He started in the parts department. He's now selling and enjoying it. Married Sonia. I've known Sonia for a long time. Matthew went to England and he worked over there as an engineer and then as a painter. He used to work on boats, houseboats. And he used to do welding and then he'd paint them. And that was over there. And in the winter, he used to go over to Aspen. And he got a job in Aspen on the lifts. And he used to go and see all the film stars going up and down the... And he met Sonia and they went over there together and they came back, got married and had two kids. And Jody, quite proud of little Jody because she was our first in the direct family of going to university and getting a degree. So she did a degree in industrial and organisational psychology and criminology. That was her two degrees. And she thought she'd go down the criminology line, but there's no jobs here for criminology. So she went into, funny enough, government department there. What's the big one there? And she was their work-safe person. And so she had to go around the countryside making sure these offices were all okay. And then she left there and went for a computer firm. And she worked as HR in the computer firm. Then her husband, Greg, used to work at Russell McVeigh as a tax lawyer. They decided to go to England. So they went to England for about 4 or 5 years. They both worked for Jody in HR. And he as a lawyer in a big law firm over there. And right in 2008, when all these places were crumbling, Jody's job was to make these lawyers redundant. She didn't actually make them redundant, but she sat in with a partner who had to tell these lawyers, sorry, no job here for you. Jody had to sit in on a meeting to make sure the guy said the right things, so there weren't any comebacks. So she did all that, and she came back here and went to Auckland, and they had a couple of kiddies. Greg decided, went to Russell McVeigh out there, and he decided to come down here and work for Crowe Haworth. as their tax lawyer. So he's been here for the last 3 years, 4 years, and JJ's been working part-time for them as a HR consultant, and now a WorkSafe consultant. So they've done well. It's quite nice to have both of them back in Havelock
North. Yes, and did you mention how many children they have?
Matthew and Sonia have two, Sophie and Harry. Sophie's 8 and Harry is 6. And Jodie and Greg have Peyton, who is 6, and little Fletcher, who is 4.
You have another couple of interests you haven't mentioned. And the first one is golf. It's actually almost an obsession. And the second one is that you fill in some gaps at the knowledge bank.
Yes, yes. I was talking to my very good friend Frank Cooper, and my other acquaintance I know, who's Jim Newbiggin, and they said, why don't you come along to Knowledge Bank? And I said, what on earth is that? Oh, it's good, you can just come and go as you please, and there's no problem. I said, oh, that sounds like me, just a little volunteer job. Well, it's not quite like that. It's very, very interesting. You digitalise the history of Hawke's Bay, and of course it's quite nice looking at the history of Hawke's Bay, because it jogs your memory about different things you've seen. For instance, one of my first jobs was to do the pictorial publication, the photo news, and to go through those old photos, I saw a lot of old friends, 21st, weddings, quite good, quite interesting that one. And I played golf, and I thought, now I'm not going to do Knowledge Bank if it's going to interfere with my golf. And Jim Newbiggin is a fanatic golfer, said, no, it doesn't interfere with your golf. It's okay, you can fit it around.
You blend them.
So I've been playing golf at the Hastings Golf Club, Bridge Pass, since 1975. Never got any worse and never got any better.
But you've had a lot of fun, and that's what it's about.
And I've seen changes to the golf course, and seen change of personnel. You make very good friends out there. Very good friends. I enjoy my golf. Very frustrating, but it's enjoyable. So that's really me. Not very exciting.
But it's amazing just how much history you've talked about in Hawke's Bay, and you know, that's really important, because we've covered things that a lot of people wouldn't even know about.
Mm. There's little things you'll notice that I've said along the way, like the little things like where the Heratonic Club started, the Hastings Club. So the family over the years, Max never had any kids. He married Rosie, and she was an Italian. He was in tanks in Italy. And that was Ivor's brother. And he met Rosie over there, never spoke any English, and married her, brought her back to New Zealand. She did a law degree, not knowing any English, did a law degree and became a lawyer. And she worked for the Public Trust for a number of years as their lawyer. And then Tony married Glenys, and Tony was a mad racehorse man, mad as a, loved them, trained them. And he had 3 girls, Marie Linden, who was a very, very good jockey, and I gave her her first hockey stick. She played hockey, she was a good hockey player. Mm. And Marie was the first woman to win a New Zealand Cup galloping. Then there was Kelly, and Kelly worked in the bank. And then there was Fleur, and Fleur was a hairdresser. And then Judy had one boy, and he was into computers. And his name will come back to me. Not Graham. And Brendan, I don't know how many kids he had. Ivor had 2 kids with Zita, and had 4 kids with Lucy. The Linden name will carry on. There's one, Stacey's a Linden, and he had a boy he adopted, and his name is Linden. My son Matthew is a Linden, and he's got Harry Linden. So the Linden name will carry on. The Spencer name has stopped, apart from his half brothers. It's interesting how you see in children that bloodline, the character traits, and you can see it. Ah, yes, I can see my grandfather in that kid. Mm. I can see my uncle in that kid. Is that enough for you?
I think
it's pretty boring, but it's a bit of
history. No. Thank you, Russell.
That's all right.
And long may it last.